Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, celebrating the Aliento Tequila photo exhibit with a tequila tasting and other entertainment, November 8th, 6 to 9 p.m. Ticket info and more at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Financial literacy is one of those things that most of us say, I wish I'd been taught that when I was a kid, or else I wouldn't have dot, dot, dot. More financial institutions that we teach, the more instruction that we give these young people about finances, the fewer dot, dot, dots they will have, hopefully. But what does that look like? What are the challenges as the nature of money changes? You can call in when you with your comments and questions as we talk about youth financial literacy this afternoon. The number is 210-614-8980. What were some of the big lessons that were taught to you and maybe some of the lessons that you learned the hard way, expensive way? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Or how are you teaching your youth, your young people, and as a teacher or as a parent, how to deal with money? You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined now with Christina Irvin. She is a director of experiential learning at Texas A&M San Antonio. Welcome to The Source.
Hi, welcome. Thank you.
And also with us, Jennifer Cantu is the market manager for Bank of America in San Antonio. Jennifer, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And with us online is Steve Cobb, interim co-director, board member for the Texas Council on Economic Education and professor of economics at the University of North Texas. Steve Cobb, welcome.
Well, hi.
So tell me, Kristen, if you could give me a case, why do we have to teach financial literacy? Why is this so important?
I think it really for the success of everyone, but especially our young adults, is there are so many things that are not taught in the classroom nowadays, but really impact the daily lives of our students. I know that's one thing that we talk about quite a bit on our campus, is how are we equipping our students not just to be successful in the classroom and then in their future careers, but in their future lives. And finance really plays such a large part in all of that. Everything from buying groceries, paying rent, making sure you can put gas in the car, to do some of those bigger decisions on what is your career path and what kind of salary might you be able to pull to be able to make those meet those daily needs that you have.
And Christina, how soon do you start that type of instruction?
We start it with freshman orientation, actually. So before students even start taking classes, they go through a number of hands-on workshops and trainings that start get them thinking about not just paying for college, but paying for the other things that come along with life while they're in college. So whether it's buying materials for school, like books and things like that, or just paying the rent, getting groceries, food on the table, managing their money. For a lot of our students, this may be kind of their first foray out into the quote-unquote real world as adults, where they're responsible for managing both their time and their money. So we really kick it off early before they even start in their academic coursework, but just laying the foundation for how do you be successful in life while you are in college.
Jennifer Cantu, market manager, Bank of America in San Antonio. How soon do you think most parents should start talking about money?
Yes, thank you. I really think parents can start as early as elementary school. Often we hear that this is not something that students are even taught at a younger age. And so at Bank of America, we've been saying we would love to see more students being brought into the conversation around finances. So often, I mean, I remember when I was a college student after I graduated and got that first paycheck, and I had no idea what to do with it. I didn't understand what all of the things were going to. I also didn't understand how to save, how to budget. I got my first credit card and just started spending. Did not realize what a terrible idea that was. And that's where we really think we can start at elementary school. We have, through Bank of America, checking accounts that are available for students, for minors under the age of 18. But we also have, through our online platform of Better Money Habits, where you can go online and you can start watching videos. They're 2 to 7 minutes, and you can learn about critical things as basic as, you know, what is a credit score or how does a bank work? But you can also then watch more advanced videos. So we really think that we have a platform of videos that are available for elementary school, middle school, and high school students, and parents can get involved at a younger age so that way they're building better money habits all the way throughout their younger lives. And then that way, when they get ready to have their first paycheck, maybe after high school, or they start working a summer internship job, that way they have the foundation to know how to use their money wisely.
Steve Cobb at the University of North Texas, how deep should you go with talking to young people about money? Money is, as you know, as an economist, is a very complex thing.
Well, it is, but it's one of those that we start in small doses and then we just build on it. We've been successful here in the state of Texas to integrate personal finance concepts into the curriculum as early as kindergarten. We have personal finance concepts in the state standards from K through grade 8 in the math standards, and then it moves over into the social studies side as we move into high school. And two legislative sessions ago, we were able to get a new course in personal finance that is part of the curriculum. It's not required for students to take it yet, but that's something that we hope to get through in the next legislative session. So again, we're not teaching investment strategies to kindergartners, but we begin early with, just talking about jobs in the community. And then we work by third grade where they're connecting those jobs to income, to the type of work that's being done. By middle school, we've got students involved in things like the stock market game program that we have, and by high school it's more advanced work in the stock market game. We have an economics and a personal finance challenge where students could win at the state level and then move on to national level competition. So we believe this is something that you start early, you continue to reinforce all the way through the process, and hopefully they'll be much more prepared for the kind of programs that, we were talking about at A&M San Antonio.
But a lot of folks, a lot of young people are going to learn their money habits from their parents. And so, Christina, how do you see breaking bad habits that you may have picked up from your parents? I mean, because, a lot of kids, it's a challenge. Upward mobility is what we're shooting for, right? So mm-hmm. doing better.
Right. Absolutely. I think a lot of it is just helping to lay that foundational knowledge of what do all these terms mean. I think it's really easy to be influenced by the media and things happening around you or even your parents on when is it appropriate time to use a credit card? When do you need to be looking at investment versus savings? But helping students to kind of see who they are as their own person, because they are really responsible for themselves in their adulthood, and kind of mapping out, finding what are things that you've learned growing up from your family, from your community that have been really great that you want to replicate. I know this is something that I've done in personal reflection, is what are some of those really great lessons that I learned from my parents? And then what are things that maybe I witnessed that didn't go as well as planned? And how can I think about when I find myself in that situation that I might be able to tackle that from a different approach and try things a little bit differently? And so helping students to kind of see that while there are a lot of good things that come from the environment around them, is that they really need to use their critical thinking and problem-solving skills to determine what would be the best course of action for them should they find themselves in that same situation.
But and Jennifer Cantu, teaching about debt, I think, is really important. And good debt, bad debt, responsible debt. I mean, I'm sure that's when you talk about the credit card situation, that's what that's about.
Absolutely. It is such a hard concept to understand. And I think from a younger age, so many of our kids will, ask their parents for money and be handed a $20 bill, and then go out and do whatever they're looking for. What we'd love to see is more parents sit down with their students, even in middle school, and say, how much do you think you need for the next month? And they set a number, and then they work on creating a budget for that number. It's one way that a parent can influence a child at a young age, start working on how do you create an understanding. I talked to a customer the other day that said their student came to them and said, I think I need for the next 4 months maybe $20. Well, turns out that $20 was gone after they went to the movies one time and bought some ice cream. And yeah. So you have to understand how far your money
goes. And a $20 bill is now more online. It's being Venmoed to someone.
Absolutely.
So how does that change things currently? It's money is more online. It's more ephemeral, not as tactile. The number is 210-614-8988. What lessons did you learn? Your financial literacy. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about youth financial literacy. When is it too young to start teaching your kids about how to be financially responsible? And when is it too old? It's never too old. We could always learn more and do better. And the nature of money is changing all the time. We were talking about that as we're going into break. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to tell us about how you are teaching your kids to be financially responsible, maybe some lessons that you wish you had been taught when you were young, and how is money changing in your life? And is that making these lessons a little more difficult? And so, Steve Cobb, you're a professor of economics at University of North Texas. Do you see this money now, you know, being switched through phones, and is that changing how people think about money?
It's certainly changing the way people think about money, and it's really tough at these early ages when you don't actually see physical money changing hands. It's all in the form of either a credit or a debit card, or taking place electronically, in so many cases, with your phone. The students don't actually have the opportunity to make the connection between money being spent in exchange for goods and services. It used to be difficult because, you know, you had a credit card that looked magic to an elementary school student, that you just used this piece of plastic and you got things, and they didn't make the connection to the bill that came at the end of the month that needed to be paid. Now you're not even seeing that transaction take place with the credit card. It seems even more like magic. And so, you know, in many cases, what needs to be part of this personal finance education is actually having students associate the transactions with the money that's involved in those transactions so they can begin the kind of budgeting that we were talking about just before this. Because students really, you know, don't have a sense of how much money it takes in order to get through daily life. And these kind of lessons are, you know, the kind of things that we try to bring into the curriculum in middle school and high school for the students so that, you know, they will make better choices.
So you say, help them associate that so they should understand that the money that's being moved around is the product of hard work?
Well, that it's the product of hard work and that there are actual denominations to that money. One of the things that we've started to do in, you know, our outreach is going to elementary schools and having what we call family financial literacy nights. And so, you know, we associate it with a PTA meeting. And, you know, we'll start the evening off with some pizza and then bring in the entire families. We have, you know, some games and activities that are set up that teach personal finance concepts. And the whole family works together as they go through this process. And what we find is, you know, even something as simple as putting play money out so that these younger students are identifying the coins and the dollars and being able to make change or to calculate different amounts with that is something that many of them struggle with, because in this society where we're moving more toward the electronic money, they're just not handling cash in the way that, you know, we did when we were younger. And going back to these skills is something that's still an important part of learning money management.
Sure. Translating the abstract notion of a cost to some sort of physical items, whether it be a $5 bill and some other items, whether or not that impacts how much they appreciate the value of the transaction. I mean, that seems, I guess that's something for sociological studies down the line, right?
Well, yeah, but it is, you know, important as we start to bring these concepts to the students at an earlier age. The other thing that we're finding is that the parents are very enthusiastic supporters of bringing financial literacy education into the classrooms. The piece that that surprised us a little bit was that they want it to happen, but they don't necessarily want to talk with their kids about their own financial decisions. so in many cases, it makes it easier on the family if you know, we can do this in the school environment. These are concepts that you know, they want their students to learn, and you know, to make better financial decisions in many cases than they did. But they're not really anxious to share their mistakes with their students.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. We're talking about youth financial literacy, and Veronica is on the line. Veronica, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much. Yeah, I just had a personal experience that I wanted to share. I'm 26 now, but when I was in high school, I did take financial literacy classes and personal finance, and I thought I had a pretty good grasp on it. When I left college, though, I had all of these student loans, and I didn't really understand that aspect of it. That wasn't a focus, really. So I ended up refinancing loans through this company that was providing a service that I could have done myself easily with just like a few online forms or a few phone calls. And I ended up spending a few extra $1,000 to a company that was honestly like seemed really predatory to young people that don't understand that side of finances.
Veronica, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. And so Jennifer Cantu, market manager for Bank of America in San Antonio, buyers beware is not the policy that we want people to have. We want people to be informed and make wise decisions so they don't have to pay thousands of dollars that they don't have to people who don't deserve it, right?
Absolutely. Veronica, thank you for your call and sharing your story. Unfortunately, that is so many people's stories out there, that they were received bad advice, that they were pushed in a direction that they should not have been. I'm glad to hear that she had some financial education and literacy training in school. That's great to hear. But we really need to be doing a lot more than we currently have been doing. It shows us that there's an opportunity to do more, to reach more students, to also provide more education. And I think that's what it comes back to, is that we as a community need to be doing a better job. There's a lot of great nonprofit organizations here in San Antonio, like the Family Services runs a Financial Empowerment Center, which provides one-on-one financial coaching. There are organizations like Junior Achievement and a whole host of other groups that are working around this, that are working to get into communities to provide that education. And then you have on the other side a lot of financial services institutions that are trying to provide more information and more education to not only just our customers, but for the Bank of America platform, available to everyone, and that it's fully accessible, available online, so anyone can access it. Because we recognize that over the years, we've done a really poor job of educating the populace, and that really then hurts the individual customer who then have to pay thousands of dollars that should not have had to have happen.
Right, and also people have to be aware that there are bad actors, and there is very little consumer protection, and that there are people who are going to promise you things, and you have to be on your guard. You can't be so trusting. But you know, it's a terrible lesson that many people learn. And is financial literacy part of that as well? Telling you, I mean, there are crooks in the world.
Understandable. One of the programs I mentioned, Junior Achievement, for their finance park, they actually take kids and work through, okay, here's what your salary is, and then, hey, this thing happened to you, and now you've lost $1,000, or you invested in you know, a friend's GoFundMe account, and it wasn't successful. They throw in things so that way you learn as you go that we always have one student that raises their hand and says, this isn't fair. And we say, we know. And as part of that, learning through how to trust the right people, but also how to make the smartest decisions for your finances.
And Christina, can you tell me about, you know, little kids? How do you start talking to them about money?
You know, that's such a great question, because this is very personal to me right now with a small child at home, and having those conversations about at what age do we start implementing some sort of system for money management. I mean, my son is 2, so we're not there quite yet. We're just learning basic needs and wants.
You can use cookies to transaction.
But I think it starts right there with learning what is a need versus learning a want. I think that's such a foundational thing about what are things that are actually crucial to your survival and your success, and what are things like, you can survive without that toy. right now. And then helping your child see, as Steve mentioned, the connection between the work that it takes to go into earning that money, and then how are you spending that wisely? How are you spending it, saving it, and sharing that money wisely, and being conscious of the amount of effort that you put into that, and wanting to be judicious in the way that you're spending that.
Sure, but children are absorbing their opinions and belief and values about money from the adults that are around them, especially, you know, as a toddler in preschool years. They're observing how you do and how you handle money.
Yeah, and I think it's important to be very transparent in those conversations at the dinner table of talking about, well, do we need a new car right now, or do we want a new car? Like, let's budget. How are we gonna make this Disney vacation or whatever happen? And talking about it in front of kids, that it's not conversations that happen after bedtime, but that they kind of see that this is the reality of being an adult and figuring out, okay, what do I actually need, and how am I going to get there, and how can I set myself up for success in planning those strategies? Because I think often we don't give kids credit, and we want them to, you know, just go play and have fun. But as you mentioned, David, they are absorbing a lot of things around us. And so just having those conversations in front of them, they pick up so much of what's happening around the dinner table and around the home, and making them aware of what, you know, mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, whoever's in charge of the household, like the decisions that they are making, and that they are putting long-term thought and strategic thought into those plans.
Yeah, there have been studies that show that by the age of 7, children have typically developed their basic concepts of their financial behavior. Things like distinguishing between want and needs, and the concepts of learning and income and the ability to plan ahead. That's all developed by the age of 7. So, you know, you're teaching them starting at 2, you know, you're you seem like you're on the right track.
Well, I sure hope so.
And so, Professor Steve Cobb, can you add to that?
Well, you know, one of the things that we run into is that, you know, these kids are growing up in a society of instant gratification. And so we start early in the personal finance materials to just look at this concept of waiting and saving for an item. Now, you know, at the elementary level, we're not talking about saving for college or something along those lines. That's way too abstract. It's a toy that you know, they'll want to buy, and it'll take a couple of weeks of allowances for them to get to the point where they can afford it. But just this idea of postponing that immediate gratification so that they can save up and get something a little bit bigger that they work toward. And, you know, kind of creating this idea of delayed gratification is an important idea, because it's going to set them on that path later where they look at, you know, setting money aside for college, or setting money aside when they get that first job to start planning for their retirement, so they'll have the kind of financial security that, you know, we want them all to have.
And can you also, Jennifer Kentu, how do you think children should be brought into this?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think that's a great stat that by 7, that's where it's impacted, right? So it obviously shows us we need to be starting a lot younger. There are plenty of ways to do that through a variety of different programs. But also, if you go on to bettermoneyhabits.com, there are videos that are specifically geared towards kids that you can watch and see how you should start talking about budgeting, how you should start talking about savings, how you should start talking about all of these important topics that will lead towards better practices and better than habits later in the future.
Well, some of the tips from experts say that you should have family meetings where everyone is involved, and everyone in the family is involved in discussing what are the future financial responsibilities for the family. How are we going to deal with certain things, including issues of, like, how, you know, they should understand that you pay property tax, or where's the money come from, and where, you know, mommy and daddy, where they, or whoever, or the parents, where do I get their money from, and how it's used to take care of everyone.
And I think for so long, we've had almost a culture or an acceptance of, you don't talk about money.
Yeah, that's what it was when I was brought up.
Exactly.
All we heard, my mom's instruction was, we are poor. We are P-O-O-O-O-O-R, poor. Don't go off spending money you don't have on things you don't need. That's the only financial instruction I ever
there
got.
There you go. That's all of it. That's all you needed, right? And then you were fine for life. Unfortunately, that has been our history. That is what so many families go into this and say, we don't talk about money. We don't talk about finances. But But then as kids and as even young adults, that leaves us to questioning and not really knowing where to go or where to look to. And so I fully agree. I think the best option would be for families to sit down. You might not have to go through the weeds and the details and know every little thing of what's being spent, but you do need to understand, how does this money come in? Where does it go out? How do we make decisions on that and have that as your frame
right.
of reference?
And you do need to do some planning and put some frontal lobe energy into this, or else things are going to go sideways. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Michael, you're on the board. I'm going to get you on the air when we come back, because you have a question I really want to get on the air. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break.
Cultural heritage is constantly at risk by population growth, natural disasters, and climate change. When do you know when heritage is worth saving?
What is the contemporary value of the heritage now? And then we're going to make choices about how we're going to respect it and care for it into the future.
Cultural heritage, next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. How do you talk to your children about money? How did your parents teach you how to be fiscally responsible, or did they? What do you wish you had learned in the earlier age? Should schools be teaching financial readiness like this, or some kind of education, even up to parents, having parents come in to learn these things as well? Do you have any helpful tips or tricks about other parents or educators about how to teach about money? We're talking about youth financial literacy this afternoon, and the phone number is 210-614-8980. I'd really like to hear your personal story about how this went down in your household, because, it's kind of a inside the house kind of a thing. Very rarely do we get to peek at this part of life. And the people who do it well, really, we should be learning from them, because this is a great skill to have. The number again is 210-614-8980. Let's go to Michael on the phones. Michael, thanks for holding on. I like your question. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for taking the call. I'm curious. We hear so much today about income inequality and the wealth gap, and I'm curious to wonder how much financial or lack of financial understanding contributes to that, and if we had a much smarter young population, how much that might, in regards to finance, how much that might narrow the gap, if at all.
All right, Michael, thank you for that. I'm going to go first to Steve Cobb. He's the interim co-director and board member for the Texas Council on Economic Education and a professor of economics at North Texas, University of North Texas. So, Professor Cobb, what about income inequality in a relationship to financial literacy?
Well, the one thing that we find is that education is still the big mediator when it comes to economic inequality. And one of the major concepts that, we bring into the curriculum when we talk about financial literacy, particularly in the high school level classrooms, is the connection between education and economic success. And so I think there's, two components to this that are important. And I mean, one is kind of things we've been talking about before in terms of having students understand the kind of financial decisions that are coming up for them. But I think also it's important that they understand the level of education that's going to be necessary for the types of careers that may be in front of them. My experience working with high school students has shown that there's usually three things that create gaps for the students. First is that they misunderstand the cost associated with living in the real world. They just, really underestimate how expensive it is to go out and, just be a participant in the economy. The second thing is that they tend to overestimate the amount of money that you make in, different kinds of jobs, or they see themselves as, professional athletes, or, these days, video bloggers that are going to make huge amounts of money. So they're kind of overestimating the income side, underestimating the expense side. And the third area is that they don't really do a particularly good job of understanding the level of education that's going to be necessary for the kinds of jobs that they see themselves in. And so I think that the type of, personal financial literacy in the curriculum that we've been talking about can really help the students to address, all three of those areas so that they come out with a better understanding of how expensive it's going to be on your own. They understand the connection between education and economic success. And, I think the state is doing a better job with this. We've kind of in this new Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board program called 60 by 30, we're working into the middle schools and high schools and through the universities to kind of show students what different economic opportunities are out there and what the different exit points would mean for them. So if you're pursuing a certain type of career and you're just going to finish after high school, then these are the job opportunities that would be available and the associated salaries. If you continued on and got an associate's degree, these are how those prospects would improve. If you then went on and got the four-year university degree, these are the opportunities that would open up for you. And I think the more that students are exposed to these, the better the decisions that they make are going to be.
Sounds like you're asking each of these students to kind of make a business plan about what they expect their future to be, knowing how much it would cost to develop go to the education and what that education is going to bring home. So Christina Irvin, Director of Experiential Learning at Texas A&M San Antonio, what's your experience there?
Yeah, well, and I really wanted to tie this back to, I think it connects a lot with Jennifer's response to Veronica's question about the predatory lending, which is, in addition to financial literacy, it's really important to have financial inclusion, which is access to those resources and the education of knowing that those resources really exist. So I think you'd mentioned a number of great programs out in the community and resources online, but if folks don't have access to the internet or they're not aware of those services, we're not able to help them achieve financial success in that. And I think that's one of the things that we're very aware of from the university side as well, especially given the demographic of our student body, is we're also very aware of having a culturally sensitive approach to these conversations. I know we've often heard those analogies about budgeting and saving, like, we'll just give up that $3 latte or five, whatever they are now, $5 lattes every day. But for a community, for a person that's already well outside the scope of their budget, that doesn't help them when they're just trying to build up an emergency fund in their account and they're already kind of like scraping the bottom of that, which can be the case for a number of our students, is we need to be culturally sensitive to the type of advice and resources we're referring them to.
I'm going to go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. You can call in and tell us about youth financial literacy and how that's working in your house. Yolanda is on the line. Yolanda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. When my kids were little and they were in elementary, they would do chores and get a certain amount of money. I noticed that if they did not have the physical money in their hands, they had no concept of what was going on because they kept thinking, well, I still have. I gave them the money, and then they wanted to buy a doll or a ball. And I said, well, it costs $3, and you have five. They decided that they really didn't need that doll or that ball if they had the actual money in their hands.
Yolanda, thank you for that call. So we're seeing how physical money versus maybe this online credits situation, Amazon and what we have these days, how that may differ. Jennifer Cantu, market manager for the Bank of America in San Antonio, and y'all are big advocates for youth financial literacy. Do you see this is going to be a challenge moving forward?
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Yolanda, for the question. And it's great to hear that you were able to work with your kids and get them doing things that then provided them access to money and then they had to make their own decisions. I think that's a great habit as an example. But I would say digital money is changing. The way that we use and access money, I mean, I don't carry cash. I almost never have cash because I don't need to. At this day and age, I'm able to use credit cards or various cards and or send money through our online bank platform.
You can have
through
Apple
Zelle.
Pay or Google Pay.
Apple Pay, Google Pay. There's so many different options out there. So we're not really seeing physical money nearly as much. And with that, especially in the younger generation. And so with those students, with those young adults, they're not holding on to a physical cash and then handing it over and seeing that transfer and understanding that they're comprehending cash differently than we have seen previous generations.
Now, Gabriel from Twitter, he has this, and it's a great point. While digital payments make money seem more ephemeral, it provides a massive benefit by being able to track where every single cent was spent. Banks and apps can even group payments by categories like food and entertainment, and you can usually get a summary of the spending for that year. Because sometimes you may have a stack of cash one day, and the next day you're wondering, like, where did it all go? And you don't know. But if it's all tracked through your phone, then you can get a breakdown. It's like, well, maybe I'm spending too much on comic books or something. Steve Cobb, what do you think about that?
Oh, I think that's certainly true. And we're seeing Mint and others that are apps that the students that are using to help them with that tracking. But there's also the reverse side of that, is that, spending with your phones or with your debit cards, if they're not keeping track of it, I've got students on campus that buy $50 pizzas. And, it's one of those where the pizza itself is only $12, but they didn't have $12 in the account at the time. And so they've got fees that are associated with the overdraft with that. So, in some ways, we still have to have this personal finance education that it's not the post-tracking, it's also being sure that the money is there when they go out before they spend it.
Right. Let me pause a little bit on that and talk about that overdraft type situation. Jennifer Cantu with Bank of America in San Antonio, can you help us understand that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, with all of our financial accounts, there's a variety of different ways that you can work with banks, whatever kind of financial institution you have. And I think there's a variety of different accounts. So a lot of times we have student accounts that are going to have various parameters and things that protect you from things like that, from various overdraft and things. We also have under the age, so minor accounts that protect you from any kind of overdraft and things like that. So when you're working with your bank, I think it's really important to understand what accounts are available. There's a variety of different accounts for every different level. But also, going back to Steve's point of understanding and budgeting on the front end, because it is important to understand, okay, if I'm going to spend X number of dollars on entertainment, I need to be watching that closely. And I will say to the person who wrote in on social media, that is one of the greatest benefits of being able to use mobile banking and mobile platforms, is that through either the Bank of America app or any of the other apps, you can keep a very close eye and even sends you alerts. So right. I know we use alerts quite often to make sure people are aware as to where their spending is and if it drops below a certain amount.
Right, but banks are now making more money off of overdraft fees than they are from banking itself. And so, but these are painful lessons. And rather than learn that you made a mistake with $50 for a pizza or a six-pack, now, and maybe if you learn from that, you'll stop doing that in the future and take better care, and you'll have more informed financial literacy. We're taking a break. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking about youth financial literacy. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Call and tell us a story about how you learned some important lessons about money, whether that they were expensive or whether they were handed down and you had modeled learning. You saw your parents do something really smart and you developed that yourself. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Let's go to Sam on the phone. Sam, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. My question is about vehicle selling and how the market kind of changed from a commission base for the sellers to now they sell you the loan. And if you got a predatory loan or any comments on how that practice is changing.
All right, Sam, thank you for that. So buying vehicles, there's a lot of ways to buy a car. And one way, you can always get pre-approved when you show up at the car dealership. And if you have a good bank that you have a good relationship with, that shouldn't take a whole lot of effort. Jennifer Cantu, market manager for Bank of America in San Antonio.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say if you're looking to purchase a large, whether that's a car or a home or whatever that is, first and foremost, starting with talking with your bank. That's going to be the first step where you're going to be able to go in and understand what can you afford. There was even my husband and I actually were recently looking at buying a home. And so we watched one of the Better Money Habits videos on what type of home can you afford to be able to look at and really understand our finances to say, okay, what is going to be the best option for us? It might look like on paper that we can go to this extreme level, but that's really not the best thing for us knowing all the other finances that are involved. So whenever you're looking to purchase any kind of a big payment, I always say the best place to start with your bank or your credit service and to get to know them and get to know what opportunities are available for you.
But there's a lot of information online these days. You can watch videos, not just from your source, but on YouTube about people, how to buy a vehicle, what are some of the things to look out for. People just need to hit pause and do a little research, and maybe they can avoid these mistakes. But Steve Cobb, he's a professor of economics at the University of North Texas, credit scores. How do we teach kids about credit scores, and how soon do we do that, and how important is that?
Well, I think this is, one of the things that we bring into the high school curriculum now. And, a lot of things changed a few years back, when we reached the point where student loans were a bigger source of debt than credit card debt. And so at that point, it became this huge understanding that we have to start earlier, because it's not that they're going to get to college and, get that first credit card and go a little crazy and, set a bad trend in terms of the credit. They need to be thinking before they ever make that college choice about how expensive this is going to be, what the different alternatives are when they get out there. And so understanding how the choices that they make are going to impact their ability to get credit is a huge piece of this. And so, what we see in the curriculum is that we talk to them about the kind of things that Ms. Cantu was talking about, that it's not what the numbers tell you you can afford. It's looking at your budget and actually figuring out what you would be comfortable with, not what, some financial program tells you is possible. And, when you start to look in that direction, then we can make the kind of financial decisions that are not going to put you at jeopardy. And then we can take that and help them understand how that allows them to use credit in a positive manner and not create this idea that the credit is a demon, but it's something that we need to understand. We need to use it in a positive manner. And from that standpoint, the credit score can actually give us the elements that help them understand what can improve their credit and what kind of things they need to, stay away from if they're going to keep a relatively high credit score. We did something interesting this year. We were working with a group called Funding the Future that has professional bands that tour, and we bring them to the high schools and middle schools. They perform music, kind of get the students' attention, and then start talking about the importance of making good financial decisions. And part of what these bands were talking about was the importance of credit scores and how much difference a good credit score from a bad credit score could make in your ability to afford a car. That's something that the high school students are thinking about in the not too distant future. And so, I don't think this is something that you wait until they're an adult and actually dealing with credit scores. We want them to understand what a credit score is and how to have a good one before they're ever out there getting their first credit.
So we spent like most of the hour talking about financial literacy from the viewpoint of a consumer, but I'd be really interested to think about, you know, trying to teach financial literacy to young people about being a business owner and about how that could be their future. Entrepreneurship is something that young people seem to really embrace, but how do we teach them that is something that they can do and what are the components of a successful entrepreneur? Is that something that you've looked at, Professor Cobb?
Well, yes. You know, I work with the Texas Council for Economic Education, and the three things that we're committed to is increasing the exposure of K to 12 students to economics, personal finance, and entrepreneurship. And so in many cases, we're looking at lessons for the students that begin early on teaching them what an entrepreneur is, what an entrepreneur does. Then we start to, you know, look at their creativity and the way that that could, turn into a business for them. And by high school, we're promoting that as, a future opportunity for them. The Department of Labor statistics that are out now suggest that students that are in college or in high school right now will have six different careers over the course of their lifetime. And a number of those careers are things that don't even exist right now that will evolve, you know, as technology continues to change. And so, you know, the two things that we believe are at the heart of the education that today's students need is that they need to have skills that are flexible so that they're not being trained for one particular job, because very few people will have one job for their entire life. And the other is that whether it's creating their own business or just bringing kind of entrepreneurial talent to the company that they work for, that those are skills that will continue to be in demand. So, you know, we believe right alongside economics and personal finance that entrepreneurship is something that we want to emphasize in the curriculum.
And Christina Irvin at Texas A&M San Antonio, you see young people coming in, they want to be entrepreneurs, they want to start businesses, and they want to create wealth.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have a number of students that are in our College of Business that are doing exactly that, that they have their vision.
But to create wealth, you have to understand money.
Right. Exactly.
And so and that may mean, you know, develop a business plan, understanding what your assets are, understanding how to go to a bank and borrow money at a time. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Cantu at Bank of America in San Antonio, I mean, I guess that's what y'all do.
Absolutely, yeah. That's hopefully what we're doing every day. That's what all of our bankers are doing and that we're doing out in the community as well. It was mentioned earlier that education is an equalizer. And so whether you're talking about entrepreneurship and working with Texas A&M San Antonio or working on various programs, maybe you're looking to maybe start your own business or you want to get into business with someone else, that we realize that if education is equalizer, we need to make it fully accessible. And so that's why our program is available online. That's why it's free. It's not just for Bank of America customers. Anyone can go and access bettermoneyhabits.com. It's also available in English and in Spanish because we recognize that it can't just be the assumption of, well, you have to, on your own, come into our financial center, come talk to us, sit down, schedule an appointment. We need to make it more accessible and available to all.
So Stephen Cobb, a professor of economics at North Texas, University of North Texas, what is a tip that you think that parents should embrace to teach financial literacy?
I think that, talking to their students about money early on is the tip that I would share. And I guess the second piece of it is that it's like so many other parts of education that you don't always see the result immediately. It may be much later when you see that it's kicked in, but it is one of those that it begins to imprint on them and, has an impact on their decision.
All right. And let me throw the same question to Christina Irvin. Well, what's one thing that you would teach, we recommend that people do?
I would say to not be afraid to ask for help. Like, I think we've talked about, like, that there can be a lot of, like, shaming when you feel like you've done something wrong. And we've all been in that position where we've made mistakes. But there are so many resources out there that can help you get back on track. And that not being afraid to ask for help and admitting that, you know, it's complicated. It is very complex. And things are changing in tax codes and laws all the time. But to be willing to seek help.
And Jennifer Cantu, what's one thing that you recommend people teach?
I would say start today. Start having a conversation today, whether you have a 2-year-old or a 22-year-old. Begin the conversation. Start creating those habits. Start sharing how this works within your own financials, and also setting up a safe space where they can then come in and ask questions and learn from you.
And in the great words of Gilligan's Island, neither a borrower nor a lender be. Do not forget, stay out of debt. And that's it for this show of The Source, Texas Public Radio, talking about youth financial literacy. All right, thanks to Christina Irvin, Director of Experiential Learning at Texas A&M San Antonio, Jennifer Cantu, Market Manager for Bank of America in San Antonio, Steve Cobb, Interim Co-Director and Board Member for the Texas Council on Economic Education, Professor of Economics at the University of North Texas. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Rospiedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.